Dar al gobierno.
Okay, good vach, shuatov. I want to thank my dear friends, the Questels. I feel like we've, even though we haven't known each other for so long, you've always been so kind to me, and you've always been so welcoming. And I want to thank you for your generosity in making this happen, putting out this beautiful spread. We even have some fruits still from Tu B'Shvat. We should pass those around. It's not too late to enjoy the sweet fruits of Tu B'Shvat. And the truth is, we were trying to figure out how to time this shiur and when to have this shiur. And I'm glad we're having it, even though Tu B'Shvat has come and gone. Because the truth is, Tu B'Shvat is such a big mystery that we don't understand it on Tu B'Shvat. We're not going to solve everything tonight. But one of the lessons that I've thought a lot about when it comes to Tu B'Shvat is something I'd like to share with you tonight. And again, it's a very deep and mysterious yontif. To even call it a yontif is a funny thing. My daughter said to me the other day, she said, "Daddy," she said, "you know, I learned in school that tonight," she said, "on Erev Shabbos, I learned that tonight is Tu B'Shvat. We're going to light candles for Tu B'Shvat." So I said, "Well, this year it happens to fall out on Shabbos, so I guess we'll be lighting Shabbos candles." But she was confused. You know, is this like a real yontif? Is this a real yontif? Is this like Pesach? Is this like Sukkot? Is this like Shulis? Well, what exactly is Tu B'Shvat? It's so mysterious. Again, you look in the Gemaras, there aren't a lot of Gemaras. Look in the Midrashim, there aren't a lot of Midrashim. Even if you look in early, deeper dimensions of Torah, look in the Zohar, you're not going to find a lot of Ma'amari Chazal about Tu B'Shvat. And yet, we see in our times that there's a Hisoros for Tu B'Shvat. People are curious about Tu B'Shvat. People want to understand Tu B'Shvat. Svarim are being written about Tu B'Shvat. New dimensions and explorations are being uncovered and being discovered and being explored. Tzaddikim would say that on Tu B'Shvat, and Bechlal in the month of Shvat, they could sense a change in the air. The Avnei Nezer, for example, the Rebbe of Sokachov used to say that when Chodesh Shvat would arrive, already from the beginning of Shvat, but certainly he said by the middle of Shvat, he was coming up with great novel interpretations of Torah like no other time of the calendar year. All of a sudden there was this hischadshus. As the world starts to renew itself, he was tapping into that. Look at the beginning of Chumash Devar, Moshe Rabbeinu. He's giving his speeches, he's talking to Klal Yisrael, and the Torah says, and the Torah identifies the date, which is not something we always have in the Torah. The Torah says it was Aleph Shvat, and Hoel Moshe Beyer as a Torah Zos. Moshe begins to expound the Torah. He starts to open up the Torah in new ways like we've never seen before. So again, there's a lot of mystery in Tu B'Shvat. There's a lot to try to discover. There's a lot of room for chiddush, a lot of room for creativity, novel interpretation. And I'd like to begin by learning a really, really sad story. One of the saddest stories, I think, in our history of an individual, of a great individual who fell from that greatness. And that is the story of Elisha ben Avuya. The story of Elisha ben Avuya, it's a Gemara in Maseches Chagiga. Begins on Daf Yudalet of Beis. I'm going to read a little bit of it inside. But again, it's a painful story. Elisha ben Avuya was a Tana. Elisha ben Avuya was a contemporary of Rabbi Akiva. Elisha ben Avuya was the Rebbe of Rabbi Meir. Stam Mishnah, any anonymous Mishnah, is assumed to be Rabbi Meir. I'm talking about one of the Gedolei HaTanaim, one of the great Gedolei HaDor in his time. And the Gemara tells the story on Yudalet of Beis Maseches Chagiga that Rabbi Akiva and Elisha ben Avuya and Ben Azai and Ben Zoma arba nichlesu bepardis. Sounds a little bit like a Tu B'Shvat story. Four entered the orchard. What does it mean to enter the orchard? Where was this orchard? Went on a tiul in Eretz Yisrael. What was this orchard that they entered? So Svarim explained, Farshim already on the page explained that they used Shemos HaKadoshim, they used Kabbalistic names of God to have some type of Aliyas Neshama, some type of out-of-body experience. They experienced some type of Hispashtus HaGashmi, leaving behind their physical realities to enter into higher realms. And Rabbi Akiva warned them that we're going on a very dangerous mission. Now the truth is, if you look in Shulchan Aruch, as much as it sounds so strange and so foreign to us, the Shulchan Aruch says every time we daven Shemona Esrei, it's really possible for us to achieve such a thing, to have some type of aliyas neshama, an out-of-body experience. I don't think probably most of us have gotten there yet, but it's something to strive for, I suppose. To allow my neshama to in some way detach from my body, to lift itself up, again, above my physical reality. Thank you. And the Gemara tells this story that Rabbi Akiva led this group of Tanaim on this mission to the Olam Abbas, to a world beyond. And he warned them. Rabbi Akiva said, "In the world of truth, be careful not to say anything that's false. Because in the world of truth, falsehood has no place. And the Gemara tells us very tragically what happened to these four Tanaim. Rabbi Akiva was the only one who was nichlas b'shalom, v'yatza b'shalom. He went in peace and he emerged, safe travels, came out alive, came out okay, unscathed. Ben Azai, says the Gemara, hitzitz v'meis. Ben Azai glanced towards the divine, whatever that means, Hashem doesn't have a body. What exactly was he looking towards? He saw something so lofty and so spiritual that he couldn't keep his neshama, he couldn't bring his neshama back down to this world, and Ben Azai died. Shimon Ben Azai. Shimon Ben Zoma, Ben Zoma as he's known in the Gemara. Ben Zoma, the Gemara says, hitzitz v'nifka. He saw something, and he lost his mind. He went crazy. Fortunately, tragic. Never recovered. Never recovered from that experience. And Elisha ben Avuya, to use modern parlance, Elisha ben Avuya went off the derech. Elisha ben Avuya saw something in the world of truth that confused him, and he strayed from Torah. It's such an unfathomable thing. It would be the equivalent of waking up tomorrow morning and getting a news report that one of the Gedolei Ador decided to renounce his Yiddishkeit. It's an unfathomable thing. How could it be? The contemporary Rabbi Akiva's... Is that me? I think that's me. Interesting ring, no? That's what happens when you have children who play with your phone. Yeah, so imagine the Gedolei Ador wakes up one morning and decides, you know, I'm not going to be from anymore. It's completely unfathomable that such a thing could happen. But that's what happened. It's a very tragic story. What happened? The Gemara says that he saw a malach sitting in Shemayim, and he had a tradition that only a Kadosh Baruch Hu sits in Shemayim. He said, oh, maybe there's more than one God. And he got all confused, and it led to heretical thoughts. And Elisha ben Avuya eventually decided to abandon his Yiddishkeit. And the Gemara goes on, and it's very tragic. The Gemara goes on, and it says that a bas kol, a heavenly voice, rang out from the heaven and said, Shuvu banim shovavim chutz me'acher. Everyone can do tshuva except for acher, except for the outsider, the one who became known as the other. Who's acher? Elisha ben Avuya. How did he get the name acher? The Gemara goes on and it tells that when Elisha ben Avuya realized that he was going to be rejected, again by the heavens, a voice rang out and said, you can't do tshuva, you've strayed too far. So Elisha ben Avuya said, if I lost the next world, I might as well enjoy this world. And he went out and he solicited an Isha Zona. And she stops him and she says, hold on a second, I know who you are. He met at the Gavla door. She said, you were on the cover of Mishpacha magazine last week. I know who you are. I've seen you before. So he says, no, you're confused. He bends down, it's Shabbos Kodesh. He bends down, he plucks a radish out of the ground. And she says, oh, you must be Acher. Did anyone ever tell you look like that rabbi? He says, yeah, I get that once in a while. Right? You must be Acher, you must be someone else. And that's the tragic story of Elisha ben Avuya. Rabbi Meir, his student, continued to follow him around. He wanted to learn from him. The Gemara says that one time Acher was riding a horse on Shabbos. And Rabbi Meir was following alongside his Rebbe, learning Torah from him. He had such beautiful Torah, he wanted to learn from him, even after he had strayed from halachic observance. And Elisha ben Avuya turns to Rabbi Meir and he says, I've been counting the footsteps of the horse. We've reached the Tchum Shabbos. You need to turn back. But you're religious, so you have to, I can go wherever I want. I've given up on everything, but you need to go back. So Rabbi Meir says to him, maybe you should go back too. Maybe it's time for you to be Chozer B'Tshuva. And he said, no, I already heard the Baskel. Shuvu Banim Shovavim Chutz Me'ach. And again, it's such a tragic story. It's such a sad story. But I think, hidden in this story, in this Gemara Chagiga, on Daf Yodal, Daf Tezvav, a little bit on Tezayin, in this story of Elisha ben Avuya, the one who became known as Acher, the outsider, the one who was totally disconnected, I think you find the ultimate Tu B'Shvat story. Now, I want to first say something B'derach Remez, take it or leave it. We'll see who's a believer tonight. I had seen from the Lubavitcher Rebbe quotes from his father. Lubavitcher Rebbe's father's name was Levi Yitzchak. We have a small volume called Likutei Levi Yitzchak, letters from the Lubavitcher Rebbe's father, Menachem Mendel Schneerson's father. And he says an interesting thing about Tu B'Shvat. And again, Sibri Chassidus try to elaborate, try to bring Tu B'Shvat to life, because again, it's a Yom Tov where you could, again, if you just read the Mishnah at the beginning of Maseches Rosh Hashanah, it's nothing other than a detail of a halacha. It doesn't have all of the flavor and all the excitement that's emerged in more recent years. So Lubavitcher's father, in a letter, he says, Tu B'Shvat is itself a name of Hashem. How is Tu B'Shvat a name of Hashem? How do you see in Tu B'Shvat a hint to Hashem's name? Hashem's most basic name that appears 1,820 times in the Torah is Yud Hei Vav Hei. Yud Hei Vav Hei. Ha Yehovah V'Yiyah, that's God's name. That's Hashem's most common name, but once every three psukim in the Torah, Hashem's name, he's also called Shakai, he's called Elohim, he's called Kel, but Yud Hei Vav Hei is Hashem's basic name. So Lubavitch Rebbe's father said that Tu B'Shvat is the name of God. How is Tu B'Shvat the name of God? He says because Tu B'Shvat is in the 11th month. Shvat from Nisan is the 11th month. And it's on the 15th day of the month. And 11 plus 15 is 26, which is Yud Kei Vav Kei. So Tu B'Shvat is the name of Hashem. Okay, take it or leave it. So I'll say something that's hard to wrap your head around. I'll say something that might be even harder to wrap your head around. Again, take it or leave it. Where do I find Tu B'Shvat in Shas? So again, if I want to just know that, again, the detail of the halacha, the machlokas, Neshama, Yisrael, the opening Mishnah, Rosh Hashanah, so that's where I find it. But the truth is, if I really want to find the secret of Tu B'Shvat, so to speak, where do I find it in Shas? Where am I going to look? In the Shisha Sidrei Mishnah, where am I going to look? Well, certainly it's going to be in Moed. It is a Yom Tov of sorts. So I'm going to look in Moed. How many Masechtos are there in Moed? In Seder Moed, there are 12 Masechtos, maybe corresponding to the 12 months of the calendar year. So if Shvat is the 11th month, presumably Shvat should be the 11th Masechta. What's the 11th Masechta of Moed? So it depends. Depends how you cheshvin. If you go up, you know, if we pick up a Shas off the shelf, you'll probably say that Moed Katan is the 11th Masechta, and Chagiga is the 12th Masechta in Seder Moed. But the truth is, many of the Rishonim felt otherwise. That really Chagiga comes before Moed Katan. Chagiga is in fact the 11th Masechta, and Moed Katan is really the end of Seder Moed. If that's true, again, it's very much Bederech Remez, obviously. Again, take it or leave it. But Maseches Chagiga, where we're reading the story of Elisha ben Avuya, the 11th Masechta of Moed, on Daf Tesvav, the 15th page, that's when Acher hears the call. Shuvu banim shovavim chutz me Acher. You can't do tshuva. And I want to try to use this, again, this Gemara, which superficially, I'm hiding a piece of the Gemara from you still, but superficially the Gemara has nothing to do with Rosh Hashanah li'ilanos, or Rosh Hashanah li'ilan, as the Gemara actually says, as the Mishnah actually says. But I want to try to crack open the secret of this Gemara and try to discover within it the secret of Tu B'Shvat. Let's talk about Tu B'Shvat in the more classic sense. Let's leave Elisha ben Avuya for a few minutes. Let's talk about Tu B'Shvat in the more classic sense. The Mishnah that begins Maseches Rosh Hashanah says, Machlokas again, Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, is it the first of Shvat? Is it the 15th of Shvat? But the Mishnah refers to it as Rosh Hashanah li'ilan. It doesn't say ilanot, it doesn't say trees. It says that Tu B'Shvat is the Rosh Hashanah for the tree. What's the tree? What's the ilan in the singular? Many, many svarim are trying to figure out what is the tree in the singular that's being hinted to in this Mishnah. And furthermore, I'll ask an even more simple question. Rosh Hashanah, today was the Rosh Hashanah. Yeah, today was Rosh Hashanah for the trees. Or for the tree. So that means that on Friday, you went outside and you saw a tree and it was covered in snow. And the tree had no fruit. And the tree had no leaves. So you went to sleep and you said, tomorrow I'm going to wake up. It's going to be Rosh Hashanah for the trees, the birthday of the trees, like my five-year-old daughter told me. Right? So I'm going to wake up the next morning, I'm going to see, you know, the trees are back to looking like trees. They're going to have leaves, and they're going to be flowering, and there's going to be some fruit on the trees. Now you'll say, it's impossible, how could things change so quickly? So I'll ask you, did you find it unusual this week, and it was like 70 degrees, you were putting the air conditioner on, and the next day we had a snowstorm? So things can change quickly. Things can happen very quickly. But reality was that we all woke up this morning and the trees were still dead and the snow is still on the ground. So what does it mean that this is the Rosh Hashanah for the trees? What changed overnight? What are we celebrating? The birthday of the trees, the renewal of the trees. The trees are completely dead. Nothing's happening outside. The trees are still frozen over. What are we celebrating? So Rashi and Maseches Rosh Hashanah in two places reveals to us the secret, a little bit of what's happening with that dead tree on Tu B'Shvat. Rashi says that on Tu B'Shvat, the seraf is ole ve'ilan. That the sap, the nutrients, so to speak, again, I'm not sure if biologically this is exactly correct, but certainly, al pi machshava, what's happening on Tu B'Shvat is that the inner nutrients of the tree are starting to rise up, the inner nutrients of the tree are starting to gather themselves together, And the first movement towards the rebirth of the tree is taking place on Tu B'Shvat. That's what's taking place. Sraf Ola Be'ilan, the sap, the nutrients are rising up in the tree. Which means you look out the window and you see a dead tree on the outside. But Chazal are telling us, what Rashi's telling us in the Maseches Rosh Hashanah, what we're celebrating on Tu B'Shvat, is that even though the tree looks completely frozen over on the outside, and there's no fruit, and there's no leaves, and there's no flowers, and there's nothing, but there's a spark of life that still exists inside that tree. And slowly, slowly, through a long process, that tree is going to come back to life. I'll tell you a beautiful story from Rav Freifeld. Rav Shlomo Freifeld, of course, was the founder of the Shar Yashiv Yeshiva. And Rav Freifeld was once sitting on a park bench, along with one of his contemporaries. And he noticed there was a boy standing off in the distance. Rav Freifeld pointed to the young man and he said to the other Rav, he said, "You see that boy over there? You see that young man over there?" So the other Rav says, "Who? The one with the ripped jeans?" So he says, No. Do you see that boy over there?" So he says, "Who? I don't see the one with the ripped jeans and the Grateful Dead t-shirt, the one over there?" So he says, "No, but do you see him? Do you see the one over there?" So he says, "Which one? The guy with the jeans and the t-shirt, the ponytail, that guy over there?" So Rav Freifeld says, "No, but do you see him? Do you see his neshama? Do you see him? I also see on the outside. Right? I see someone who doesn't necessarily look like he's interested in joining our yeshiva. Right? But do you see him? Do you see his neshama?" That's how Rav Freifeld built Shar Yashiv. Rav Freifeld built Shar Yashiv by taking American kids who would have otherwise ended up in public school, who were superficially not at all interested in what he was selling, and Rav Freifeld saw their neshama. Rav Freifeld was able to look at a dead tree, so to speak, and be able to see that what the Svarim call the kista d'chiyusa, that spark of life, that's always alive, that's always burning inside of every Jew. That Jewish neshama that's alive on the inside, even if on the outside, sometimes it's frozen over. And it's not producing such beautiful fruit. Not producing peiros for the creator of the world. No Torah, no tefillah, mitzvos, maisim tovim. Right? But to be able to look beyond the surface, and to be able to see something that's alive on the inside. What's so special about a tree? What's the chiddush of a tree? If I asked you, as people, as human beings, do we have more in common with trees or animals? What would you say? And don't be blinded by the fact that this is a Tu B'Shvat discussion. Right? I would say, superficially, man has a lot more in common with animals than we do with trees. No? On the surface. Right? Our biological structure is much more similar to an animal than it is to a tree. The way that we eat, trees also have to ingest nutrients, but the way that we eat is much more similar to an animal. Right? The way we excrete, the way that we sleep. Again, we could argue that plants also sleep and plants also eat. Right? But animals have eyes and animals have legs. It's not exactly the same, but it's much more similar. As people, we're much more, right? Our overall being is more comparable to an animal than it is to a tree. And yet the Torah says in Parsha Shoftim, Ki ha'adam eitz ha'sadeh. And all this time I'm talking about this connection that man has to a tree. In what way is a person like a tree? Ki ha'adam eitz ha'sadeh. It's actually rhetorical in the Torah. The Torah actually says man is not like a tree. It says when you go to war and you're fighting against your enemy, don't chop down fruit trees because it's a tree, a man, you have to fight against the tree. Leave the trees alone. So it's actually Pashup Shad, it's a rhetorical statement. But all the Sifrei Drush and all the Sifrei Chasidus read it, B'nichusa, Kipshuto, Ki ha'adam eitz ha'sadeh. Man is like a tree. How is man like a tree? What's the greatness of a tree? What can we learn from a tree? So I saw a beautiful explanation from the Chalban. The Chalban, Kishmo Kenu, is a milkman in Eretz Yisrael. He's actually a milkman by profession. He's also a great Rav, a great Kabbalist, a great Talmud Chacham. Many, many volumes of his Svarim have emerged in the world today. It's very hard to wrap your head around him when you meet him, or you see a picture of him. Just go, if you don't know what I'm talking about, Google the Chalban. You'll see a picture of a sweet little Jewish man wearing a little cap, clean shaven, holding a block of cheese. And then I'll invite you to my home. You can see I have a full shelf of Svarim on Bereishis, Shemos, Vayikra, Midbar, Dvarim, every Yom Tov, thousands of pages of Chidushei Torah, again, Nigla, Nister, all sorts of very deep things. And a very deep and mysterious Jew in his own way. The Chaban says, what's the greatness of the tree? What's the chiddush of the tree? Something about the tree, which you can look at the tree and you could feel bad for the tree. You could say, oh, Nebuch, the poor tree. It's so limiting. It's so restricting. It's so restraining. What's the greatness of the tree? The Chalban says the greatness of the tree is the fact that the tree can't move. That the tree is tied to its place. Right? An animal has the ability to roam the earth, to roam freely. A tree is tied to its roots. Says the Chalban, what do we learn from the tree? Ki ha'adam eitz ha'sadeh. We're reminding ourselves that just like a tree, a Jew has to remind himself that even though Hashem gave us the ability to move about, Hashem gave us as a gift, as human beings, we have that freedom. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to realize the same way the tree can't survive without a deep understanding of where it's attached, of its shoresh, of where it's drawing its sustenance from. So too a Jew has to remind himself, as I move about, Hashem is kind, Hashem allows us to roam the earth. Hashem says, go places, do things. But be like a tree in the sense that what? Understand that your survival is dependent upon your kesher, your connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be davak in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to walk with Hashem, wherever I find myself. That's ki ha'adam eitz ha'sadeh, that's the godless, that's the greatness of the tree. And that connection that we have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whether we're cognizant of it or not, can never be severed. It's not possible for a Jew. Let me ask you, is it possible for a Jew to convert to another religion? It's not possible. Why is that not possible? Why is it not possible? Let's say I don't like Judaism, I want to try something else. Why is it not possible? It's not possible because it's our biological reality. Unlike other religions, unlike the other largest religions of the world, right? Where they're not a family, we're a family. There's a DNA. A husband and wife, God forbid, they go their separate ways. They can get divorced. There's nothing that demands that they have a permanent bond. But a child can't divorce a parent. A parent can't divorce a child. It's a biological reality. There's nothing you could do to sever that reality. It just is. So therefore, ki adam eitz ha'sadeh, a Jew has to think of himself as being attached to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. We have to think of ourselves, like the Mishnah says, Tu b'shvat is Rosh Hashanah le'ilan. What's ilan in the singular? What's the tree? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Svarim say, is the ilana d'chaya. Hashem is the tree of life. Hashem is, so to speak, the big tree. And each of us, every single one of us, who has that neshama that Rabbi Freifeld said, we have to learn to see, even though it's hard to see, sometimes on the surface. We have to learn to identify that neshama that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has placed in every single Jew, to identify that neshama inside of ourselves, and to see ourselves that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, is the big tree, then I'm the little tree. Right? I have that chelek elokam mimal, that spark of the divine, that bit of neshama that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has placed inside of me, and I'm attached to the big tree, and I can never sever that connection. That my connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is absolute. What happened to Acher? Let's come back now to Elisha ben Avuya. Now that we understand a little bit what we're celebrating, we look at this dead tree, but we're celebrating that Seraph Ola B'Ilan, that inner life of that tree that's still alive. And we understand why it's Rosh Hashanah L'Ilan, because we're reminding ourselves that each of the little trees, so to speak, is connected to that big tree in Shemayim called Ribono Shel Olam, Kiviyachol. What happened to Elisha ben Avuya? How does the Gemara describe Elisha ben Avuya going off the derech? What term does the Gemara use to describe Elisha ben Avuya straying from a life of halachic observance? The Gemara says that Elisha ben Avuya was kitzeitz benetios. That means he chopped trees. He uprooted saplings. And netiyah means a sapling, a small tree. Elisha ben Avuya, unfortunately, thought that because he had made some mistakes, that because he had seen some things that had confused him, he had some questions on God, right? He decided, and because he heard a baskol even saying, shuvu banim shovavim, that all mischievous children can return, but apparently I'm too mischievous, chutz me'acher. So Elisha ben Avuya decided to uproot his tree, kitzeitz benetios. He said, my little tree is no longer connected to the big tree. What he failed to realize, what all the Svarim say, is that was his test. If you look in the writings of the Bnei Yisus, if you look in the writings of the Chavetz Chaim, he writes it in the Chavetz Chaim al HaTorah, they all say that Elisha ben Avuya, when he heard that voice come out of the Shemayim, should have turned back to the heavens, and he should have said back to Hashem, back to the Baskol. Again, whether the Baskol is a heavenly voice or it's our consciousness, it's that part inside of ourselves that tells us when we mess up, you know, you're done. You're a dead tree. You're not producing enough fruit for Hashem. You might as well just wither up and fade away. When you hear that Baskol, when you hear that voice telling you that you're not welcome anymore, you're supposed to respond and say, Afal Pichein, I'm going to fight my way back to you, HaKadosh Baruch. It's beautiful. The Bnei Yisrael writes in the Sefer Agra de Pirka. He says, he quotes from the Shulah HaKadosh. The Shulah HaKadosh actually says this in the name of his father. The Gemara in Pesachim says that everything the Baal HaBayis tells you to do, everyone listen carefully, the Baal HaBayis says, everything the Baal HaBayis tells you to do, you're supposed to do, chutz mitzei, except for get out. So everyone could stay as long as you want tonight. You can sleep over. The Questels have opened their home to everyone. Chutz mitzeh. Everyone's, I'm going to get myself in trouble. Everyone, right? Everything the Baal HaBayis tells you to do, you should do, except for get out. It's a strange Gemara. It's a Gemara in Pesachim. The Shlach HaKadosh explains the name of his father. And it's quoted by the Bnei Yisachar, Tzvi Elimelech of Dinov. Everything, who's the Baal HaBayis? Who's the, with the capital, you know, TH? Right? The Hey Ayidia. Who's HaBaal HaBayis? The Baal HaBayis, the Baal HaBira, the master of the universe, the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And everything the Baal HaBayis tells you to do, you should do. Everything Hashem tells you to do, you should do. Chutz mitzei, but if Hashem says, go away, I'm done with you. I'm not interested in you. If a Kodesh Baruch Hu seems to push you away, that's a nisayon, that's Hashem testing you. Because the biological reality of a Jew, right, the spiritual reality of a Jew, is that you're a chelek elokam imal, you're a child of Hashem, you can't sever that connection. It's not possible to divorce Avinu Shevashamayim. So says the Bnei Yisrael, Acher, we're supposed to say back to Baskel, Afal Pichin. You tell me I lose my Olam Haba, now I'll serve you without Olam Haba, I'll do it l'shma. It's interesting, the Chabad Chaim says the same thing was true about Paro. That when Paro's heart was hardened, that doesn't mean it was impossible for him to do tshuva. It means that he had to try harder, Hashem wasn't reaching out. The way that Hashem reaches out to us by the Yom L'Ram, Yimincha Pshuta L'Kabel Shavim, that Hashem's trying to pull us back in. Sometimes a person makes choices and Hashem says, okay, I'm not reaching out to you anymore. But Hashem's waiting. Hashem's hiding, so to speak, behind that wall, behind that curtain, waiting for a Jew to reach out and to call out to a Kadosh Baruch Hu and say, I want to come back. To fight against that Baskel. To push our way back to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So now let's come back to the Baskel and let's listen again to the words that Elisha ben Avi heard. Because sometimes, you know, again, the Baskel said what it said. Is Hashem lying? Sometimes Hashem's speaking to us, we just don't understand what He's saying. Think about a Keves Yitzchak. What did Hashem tell Avram to do? Hashem told Avram, take Yitzchak, v'haleyu sham la'ola. V'haleyu sham la'ola. So Avram says, okay, that's pretty tragic. I have to bring my beloved son as a karban ola? As a sacrifice? Okay. So Avram takes Yitzchak with enthusiasm, and he goes up early in the morning, and he's ready to go, and he has a knife in his hand, and he's about to shech Yitzchak, and Hashem says, well, stop. So Avram says, what, Hashem, you changed your mind? So Hashem says, I didn't change my mind. You didn't listen carefully. What did I tell you to do? Ha'aleyu sham lo'ola. Bring him up the mountain. You brought him out, shkayach, you're done, bring him back down the mountain. I never said to slaughter. You thought ola meant carbon ola? No, I never meant carbon ola. I just meant bring him up the mountain, bring him down the mountain. Sometimes Hashem speaks to us, and we're not hearing the message right. What did Acher hear? Acher heard a baskel. Shuvu banim shovavim. Mischievous children, shovev. Right? These are the days of shovavim. Shuvu banim shovavim. Return banim shovavim, mischievous children. V'chutz me'achri. Except for you. You're too mischievous. You're too bad. Your kitzeitz benetios. Acher decided to uproot himself. He cut the branches. He was done. Let's listen to the Baskel in a different way. Shuvu banim shovavim. Maybe Hashem was saying to Acher, listen. It's true you're a mischievous child. But you're still a child of the Ribbono Shel Olam. At the end of the day, you're a child of Hashem. So shuvu, banim shovavim. Even though, yes, you're a mischievous child, you may be the most mischievous Jew who ever was. But shuvu, come back to me. And if you'll say, but I've made such terrible choices, I can't come back anymore. Chutz me'acher doesn't mean with the exception of you who decided to relabel yourself as the other one, as the outsider. Hashem says, that's not the name that I gave you. That's not the name that I named for you. Chutz me'acher, what Hashem was saying to Acher was that chutz, your chitzonius is me'acher. That's not who you are. On the outside, you're a dead tree. I get it, the Ribbono Shel Olam says. Your chutz is acher, your outside is foreign. The way that you're acting superficially is completely foreign. Like the dead tree that doesn't seem to have any sign of life. But the seraf is ola be'ilan on the inside. On the inside, the tree is alive and well. The Semach Tzedek, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, said that each of the 12 months corresponds, as many tzaddikim explain, each of the 12 months corresponds to a different shade. One of the ways to arrange it, obviously, is according to their birth order, to their age. Which means that the month of Shvat, the 11th month, will correspond to who? Yosef Tzaddik. Why was Yosef, want to see an amazing thing? Why was Yosef called Yosef? What was his name? Yosef. Why was he called Yosef? What was the tefillah of Yosef? Yosef Hashem Li Ben Acher. Says the Tzemach Tzedek, Yosef Hashem Li Ben Acher. Tzemach Tzedek says the avoda of Yosef is to make a ben out of an acher. It's to take an acher and turn him back into a ben. To remind the Jew, no matter how far he's strayed. Like Rav Feivel said, see his neshama. So on the outside, he's a cold, dead tree. He hasn't produced fruit for the Rabbono Shalom in a long time. He doesn't learn Torah. He doesn't do mitzvos. He doesn't perform chesed. This Jew is frozen on the outside. But Yosef Hashem li ben acher, we look at the tree on Rosh Hashanah le'ilan, and we celebrate. You know, I'll ask you a very interesting question. A little bit of a vina hafachon. Tu B'Shvat is a celebration, the Mishnah says, of trees. Shavuos is a celebration of the Bikurim, of the first fruit. So I ask you an interesting question that some Sfarim. So why on Tu B'Shvat, which is Rosh Hashanah le'ilan, do we celebrate by eating fruit? On the Yom Tov of trees we eat fruit. And on Shavuos, which is a celebration of what? Of Bikurim, of first fruits. The minhag is, it's questioned by some, the Vilna Gaon is very against it. Right? But the minhag is we bring trees into the shul, we bring shrubbery into the shul. Why on the Yom Tov of fruit, again, do we celebrate with trees? On the Yom Tov of trees, we celebrate with fruit. It's a good question. It's totally backwards. Counterintuitive. So I'll give you half the answer. Half the answer is the reason that we eat fruit on Tu B'Shvat, even though it seems to be dishonest that there's no fruit on the trees right now, we're turning to the tree and we're saying, today's your birthday. And the tree is feeling badly about itself. The tree says, what do you mean with my birthday? I look the same as I was yesterday. I'm as cold and frozen and dead as yesterday. So we say, not according to Rashi, Maseches Rosh Hashanah. According to Rashi, Maseches Rosh Hashanah, today's a different day for you. The Seraph is Ole Be'ilah. It's going to take some time to reveal itself. Not until Shavuos will we actually see the fruit. It's an interesting remez for those, again, who like gematrias and ramazim. This one's from the Stuchina Rebbe, Shlita, Rav Matel Zilber. What a big Rebbe in Borough Park. The Stuchina Rebbe, son-in-law of Rav Moshe Wolfson, he writes in a mimer, in a Tu B'Shvat mimer from about 17, 18 years ago, printed in the sefer called Tabas HaZahav. So he says that the phrase that Rashi uses to describe, again, that inner life force that's emerging, that's beginning to emerge on Tu B'Shvat, the phrase in Rashi is Saraf Ole Ba'ilan, that the sap is rising in the tree. The Stuchina Rebbe says, Saraf Ole Ba'ilan is Gematria Shavuos. What's the pshat? And it's interesting. Why earlier today, when it was still actually Tu B'Shvat, right? The heights of Shabbos, of course, is Shal HaShudas time, Ravid de Ravid. It's the most spiritual, poignant point of Shabbos. Mincha time, this Shabbos, Mincha, we started to read what Parsha? Parsha's Yisra. We started to read about Kabbalah Satorah. What does it have to do with Tu B'Shvat? So you can say, it's coincidence. We happen to be reading about Kabbalah. We're entering into the Parsha of Kabbalah Satorah as it's Tu B'Shvat. Or you could say that really Tu B'Shvat is the beginning of Kabbalah Satorah. The Sraf Ola Be'ilan, that the sap that's rising up, Gematria Shavuos, as we begin this process of bringing back the life of the trees. Right? Yes, it's going to take some time to bear fruit. But to be able to look at that dead tree and say, we believe in you. We're confident that you're going to produce fruit. The Lubavitcher Rebbe said, that's why we eat fruit on Tu B'Shvat. We're saying that we believe that it's going to produce fruit. Yosef Hashem li ben acher. The child who looks like an acher. The banim shovavim. Shuvu banim shovavim. Your chutz is me'acher. You're outside. You've been affected by your surroundings. That's not who you really are. It's not the emes who you truly are. I want to share with you one other gemara. Very famous gemara in Maseches Tanis. The gemara tells a conversation, shares a conversation. Maybe it was a malava malka, I don't know. Two great tanaim sitting and having a meal together. They were sitting together. The gemara says that Rav Nachman and Rav Yitzchak were sitting together, have a yasei v'sudasa. Gemara and Tanis daf heyamud beis. They were sitting together, enjoying a meal together. Amar le Rav Nachman le Rav Yitzchak. Lema mar milsa. Say the Gemara Torah. So he says, Rav Yochanan taught that you're not supposed to talk while you're eating because you could choke. So let's finish eating and then we'll share some Divrei Torah. Okay. So when they finished eating, he says, okay, I'll tell you the Dvar Torah from Rabbi Yochanan. Tell you the Dvar Torah from Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan said, Yaakov Avinu lo meis, that Yaakov Avinu never died. Yaakov Avinu never died. So he says back to him, Yaakov Avinu never died. How can you say Yaakov Avinu never died? Have you read through the Chumash? Right? They mourned him, they eulogized him, they buried him, they embalmed him. What do you mean Yaakov never died? So he says back to him, Mikra ani dorish. I'm speaking b'derach drush. Shenemar va'ata al tira avdi Yaakov nu Hashem. Nothing to worry about. I'm going to save you. I'm going to bring you back from your captivity. Makish hu lezaro. Yaakov is compared to his descendants. Mazaro b'chayim. Just as the descendants of Yaakov live on. So too, Yaakov inu lo meis. Yaakov lives on. through his descendants, Yaakov lives on. Okay, interesting Gemara, strange Gemara. Yaakov Avinu lo mes. Rabbi Yochanan's statement. What happens after that, the very next Gemara? He says, you know what, this has been such an enjoyable experience eating with you and learning this deep drasha from you, this beautiful insight, Yaakov Avinu lo mes. He says, can I ask you for a bracha? So he says, Rav Nachman says to Rabbi Yisrael, can I ask you for a bracha? So he says, a bracha? What kind of bracha? Okay, I'll give you a bracha. And listen to the bracha he gives him. Right after Yaakov Avinu lo mes, look at the bracha that he gives him. Amar, he says to him, Ilan, 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 B'ma Avarechecha, tree, tree, what can I bless you with? Right? He tells the story of a person who's looking for somewhere to rest, something to eat, finds a stream, finds a tree, he's sitting under this tree, eating its fruit, and he wants to give a bracha to the tree. He says, Ilan, Ilan, B'ma Avarechecha, how can I bless you? Should I bless you that you should have fruit? Your fruit should be sweet, you have sweet fruit. Should I bless you that your shade should be pleasant? Your shade is very pleasant. Should I bless you that a body of water, a stream of water should flow beneath you? You have that as well. El yihi ratzon shekol nitios shenotin mimcha yihiyu kamoscha. Tree, tree, I give you a bracha that the little sapling, that the little trees that come from you, right, should be just like you. What's the connection, Yaakov Avinu lo mes, and after this bracha, that Ilan, Ilan, what can I bless you with? That the netia, that the little tree should be like the big tree. It's exactly the story of Elisha ben Avuya. Elisha ben Avuya was kitzetz ben netios. He didn't understand that his little tree in this world was not such a little tree. Like the Chalban explained, the godliness of a tree, the greatness of a tree is that it's rooted, that it draws from its roots, that it's connected to the Ilan of the Chai, it's connected to the big tree, Rosh Hashanah le'ilan, singular, connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ilan, Ilan, I give you a bracha. That your children should know this. That your children, that the netios, the small trees, should realize you kamoscha. That they should understand Yaakov Avinu lo mes. That no Jew ever dies, even if on the outside the Jew again is not acting the way a Jew should be acting. But to be able to look at our fellow Jews, to be able to look at ourselves on those days that we wake up like a dead tree. And we're not so inspired to serve Hashem. We're not in the mood to get up and to daven. We're not in the mood to take the time to learn Torah. Right? And there's a lot of other things we could choose to do on a Motzei Shabbos other than sit and then listen to me talk for too long. There's a lot of things you could do. But to be able to realize the Yaakov Avinu lo mes, the Yaakov Avinu lo mes, that my neshama wants this, even if my body sometimes gets in the way, even if it doesn't seem on the surface that sometimes I want this, Yaakov Avinu lo mes. It's very interesting. One of the Talmidim of the Vilna Gaon, Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Chaver, said that it's so unusual that the Egyptians mourned Yaakov Avinu the way that they did. They were so distraught, the whole world was so distraught. When Yaakov died, everyone was mourning. What were they mourning? What was the kesher to Yaakov? You know, such a strange thing. You know, imagine a person gets up to go to work one morning, they get on the Long Island Railroad, whatever they're traveling, right? And they see a person, clearly a non-Jewish fellow, and they see the guy standing there with his briefcase on his way to work, and he's crying his eyes out. So you say, what happened? So he says, you didn't hear what happened? One of the Gedolei Yisrael passed away. What do you know from the Gedolei Yisrael? A non-Jewish person traveling the Long Island Railroad on his way to, what's your connection to this? That you'd be crying like this? Yaakov Avinu passes away, and the people of Mitzrayim are mourning. What's their connection to Yaakov? Yaakov, Chazal says, he spent the last 17 years of his life in Mitzrayim, sitting and learning. What was their connection? What was the average Mitzri's connection to Yaakov, you know, that they mourned him so terribly, they were so distraught when Yaakov passed away? So Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Chaver says a very deep thing. One of the Talmidei HaGra, Rabbi Yisrael Isaac Chaver, says they were mourning Yaakov not out of love for Yaakov, because they wanted to establish, they wanted to say, Yaakov is dead. Look, Yaakov is dead. Yaakov is mes. They wanted to create a reality that Jews are not always going to re-emerge, despite the fact that we're the underdog so many times. Despite the fact that it looks so many times that our tree is not going to make it. They wanted to mourn Yaakov to say he's dead once and for all. But the reality is, Ilan, Ilan, the Gemara that follows immediately after Yaakov Avinu lo mes. Yaakov Avinu never dies. To be able to look at a Jew and to believe in his ability in the right time to produce fruits. To realize that Yaakov will always survive when Yaakov has his encounter with Esau. And Yaakov's trying to figure out. Yaakov's considering the possibility there's going to be terrible losses in his battle against Esau. And he divides his camp in two. And Yaakov says with confidence, he says, I'm absolutely certain that if the first camp is destroyed, then the Machan HaNisha on the Pleita, then the second camp will survive. I saw it in the Shem Yishmuel's Haggadah. Shem Yishmuel, the Rebbe of Sakachov, they have in there a few insights from his son. the Chas named David, of David of Sakachov. By Yachat, when we break the middle matzah, he talks about this when Yaakov broke up his camp into two. And he says, how did Yaakov know for sure that the Machana Hanisha of the Pleita, that the second part of the camp is going to survive? He says, because that's the reality of the Jewish people. Yaakov Avinu lo meis. Yaakov says, if you're going to knock out the first camp, if it's going to look like we're dead, right? If the first camp, if the outside, so to speak, is no longer alive, but you'll see the inside is going to reemerge. That's the reality of the Jewish people. That's what Rav Yochanan taught us. Yaakov Avinu lo meis. Like David HaMelech says at the beginning of Tehillim, that we should be halavai, halavai, the bracha for every Jew. Ashrei Ish, praiseworthy. How does David HaMelech begin Tehillim? Praiseworthy is the person who tries his best to walk in the way of righteousness, that he doesn't get lost along the way. And what does David say he's like? He's like a beautiful tree that's planted by the water. Asher pirio yitein bi'ito, that will produce its fruit in the right time. The pirio yitein bi'ito, in the right time. It might take some trees not a long time to produce fruit. It might take other trees a very long time to produce fruit. But to be able to believe, again, on Rosh Hashanah Le'ilam, to believe that every Jew eventually is going to produce fruit. The Sfarim say that those words of David Melech, Pirio Yitein Be'ito, is Gematria Chamisha Asar Shvat. Pirio Yitein Be'ito. Eventually, the story of Tu B'Shvat is that everyone, even the Elisha Ben Avuyas, will eventually figure things out, will eventually come back. The Rabbi Yochanan in Maseches Tanis, who taught us Yaakov Inu Lo Meis, who was Rabbi Yochanan? Who was this Rabbi Yochanan? Who is this Rabbi Yochanan? Let's go back to Maseches Chagiga one last time. The Gemara in Chagiga says that again Rabbi Meir, the Talmud of Acher, Rabbi Elisha ben Avuya, was following him around. Rabbi Meir so badly wanted to bring his Rabbi back. Do you know what Rabbi Meir's arguably most significant statement in Shas is? The Talmud of Elisha ben Avuya was begging him. When he said, when Elisha ben Avuya said, we've reached the Tchum, you can't go any further, turn back. He said, please, you Rabbi, you turn back too, you can do tshuva. You're also a child of Hashem. You can't get divorced. You can try to uproot your tree, but it'll never work. It can't be kites benetios. The little sapling has to be like the big tree. The kesher is an absolute bond. It can't be severed. What's Rabbi Meir's most important halachic statement in Shas? And you probably don't even think it's a halachic statement. In Yeshiva this year, we're learning the Seches Kedushin. Kedushin Daf Lamed Vav. A machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir about a pasuk in Parshas Re'eh. The pasuk says, "Banim atem l'Hashem lokecha." That's an unbelievable thing. Spend endless amount of time meditating on that pasuk. "Banim atem," you are a child. Every Jew, male, female, is a child of Hashem, a prince, a princess, a child of the Creator of the universe. "Banim atem l'Hashem lokecha." Says Rabbi Yehuda, a very depressing thing. If you want to be a child of Hashem, you have to act like a child of Hashem. Only if you act, if you're noheg minog banim, if you act like part of the royal family, are you part of the royal family? But if not, then you're no longer. And you're divorced, you're no longer a child of Hashem. Comes along Rabbi Meir and says, no such thing. Bein kachu bein kach, regardless of your behavior, banim atem l'Hashem lokechem. A Jew has to know. And if it's not true about yourself because you don't have this issue, well, maybe it's true about a cousin. Maybe it's true about a friend. Maybe it's true about a child, God forbid. Right? Who seems to be disconnected. Right? To be able to look at a Jew, we were frightened, looked at that Jew, and said, see his neshama. To see the absolute reality, says Rabbi Meir, bein kachu bein kach, regardless of how a Jew acts, we have to believe that that Jew can one day produce fruit. How to get that person back on the path is a delicate process. But to believe that pirio yitein bi'ito, that the fruits will be produced. How do we paskin? Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir, how do we paskin? Normally, a machlokas Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir, halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. That means the halacha should be that if we don't act like proper children of Hashem, we're no longer His children. The Rashba, one of the Gedolei HaRishonim, has two tshuvos. Tshuvos HaRashba, in two places, where he says, in this Gemara, we paskin like Rabbi Meir. And he brings proof that that's so. We paskin like Rabbi Meir. Sounds like they're just talking. It's B'derach Drush. It's a halacha. The halacha is that we are children of Hashem, regardless of our behavior. So Rabbi Meir is desperately begging the Rabbi Meir who paskins that you're always a child of Hashem. He says to his Rabbi Elisha ben Avuya, come back, reinterpret the Baskel. Shuvu banim shovavim. Yes, you're a mischievous child, Acher. Elisha ben Avuya, you did some bad things, you had some heretical thoughts. But come back, shuvu, come back. Chutz me'acher, your chitzonius is me'acher. Your outside is foreign to Yiddishkeit. But your inside is still good. It's like a Shabbos lamp. One of our rabbis said, it's like compared it to a Shabbos lamp, right? The light's on. It's just a question of how much you let the light shine out. So every Jew has that illumination inside of himself or herself. The goal is just to let that light shine out. Rabbi Meir, at the end, when he couldn't when he couldn't win with Acher, the Gemara says that Rav Meir said that when I leave this world, because Acher was stuck mamish in limbo, he wasn't even sent to Gehenna. That's the worst for a soul, to be stuck in limbo. So Rav Meir says that when I die, I'm gonna get Acher at least into Gehenna, to at least begin the process of his tikkun. And you'll see that there's going to be smoke coming up from the grave. So Rav Meir passed away, and lo and behold, smoke's coming up from the grave. It's a good sign. So says Rabbi Yochanan, the same Rabbi Yochanan who said Yaakov Avinu lo meis, says Rabbi Yochanan, you think it's a big chachma to send your Rebbe to Gehenna? When I die, says Rabbi Yochanan, I'm going to get Elisha ben Avuya into Olam. The Kachav, the Gemara says that's what happened. Because Rabbi Yochanan and Meir, this is a tag team of people who understood the significance of every Jew. To be able, again, to look at that dead tree, and to be able to say, Saraf Ola Be'ila. By Shavuos, for sure, we're going to be seeing fruits. We're so confident we're going to eat the fruits right now. That's how confident we are. It's late. It's very late. But Motzei Shabbos is a good time. The Baal Shem Tov and the Talmid of Baal Shem Tov used to always tell stories of Tzaddikim on Motzei Shabbos. So I want to end with just two stories about the Rebbe Maharash. The Rebbe Maharash was the fourth Lubavitch Rebbe, or Shmuel of Lubavitch. They said of all the seven Lubavitch Rebbe's, he was the one who had the most, they said about him, he was the one who was most similar to the Baal Shem Tov, and that he was constantly doing open miracles. He knew things, he was doing. Some of the Rebbe's, by Lubavitch actually in particular, they're very not into miracles. They felt that's not a way to try to win a Jew over to Judaism. A certain tzaddikim were very into that, and others were very against that. When the Kotzker Rebbe came for the first time to the Chos of Lublin was a Baal Ruach HaKodesh. The Chos of Lublin had 500 Talmidim who were also Baal Ruach HaKodesh. When the Kotzker Rebbe came to the Chos of Lublin, on his way to Lublin, he bought a pocket knife. He needed to buy a knife, he bought a pocket knife. He walks into the Chos of Lublin, and the Chos of Lublin says to him, before he says anything, he says, what did you need to buy a pocket knife on the way? So the Kotzker, it was very harif, and the Kotzker was no nonsense. The Kotzker said to the Chos of Lublin, he said, if you think you're going to win me over with your Ruach HaKodesh, you're wrong. That's what he said to the Chos of Lublin. That's not what I came here for. I want you to teach me how to daven. I want you to teach me Torah. I'm not going to be impressed by your miracles. Yeah, some tzaddikim, yeah, some tzaddikim, no. But by Rav Shmuel of Lubavitch, they said he had Baal Shem Dika Maisalach by him. He always knew things, very strange things. So one time, Rav Shmuel of Lubavitch turned to one of his chassidim, and he said, I need you to buy us two tickets. We're traveling together. We're going on a trip. The Rebbe's taking the chassid on a trip. Where are we going, Rebbe? Don't ask questions. Bye. He gave him a time. He gave him a location. He said, we need two first-class train tickets. This time, this day, this station. Okay. Rebbe tells you to buy two tickets. You go buy two tickets. So he goes to the train station. He buys these two tickets. And the date comes, and they board the train. They're traveling there. And the chassid's wondering, where are we going? What's going to be? Sitting on the train, Shmuel Lubavitch, perfectly calm, fourth Lubavitch Rebbe. He said, all of a sudden, this fellow gets in the train. Doesn't look like a Yid. He gets on with his briefcase. He sits down right across from the Rebbe Maharash, or Shmuel Lubavitch. And the Rebbe looks at him, and the Rebbe says, it's not proper for a descendant of Yaakov to have his hands involved in the hands of Esau. Give me what's in your pocket. And the fellow reaches into his pocket, takes out a revolver, puts it into the hands of Rav Shmuel of Lubavitch, who opens the window of the train, throws the revolver out the window, and gets off at the next stop and goes back to his place. Story number one. Story number two, he says to one of his chassidim, we need to go to Paris. Paris? Shopping in Paris? We need to go to Paris. And I'd like to stay in the Alexander Hotel, which was the most expensive hotel in Paris at the time. They come to the Alexander Hotel, the Rebbe and his chassid, and the fellow at the desk is, you know, oh, Rabbi, Rabbiner, it's a pleasure to have you in our hotel. We'll get you a nice room. So the Rebbe says, I want a room on the floor with the casino. So Rebbe, you gamble a little? So he says, Rabbi, we don't think you're going to be comfortable on that floor. It's not exactly your scene over there. The Rebbe says, I want the closest room to the casino you can get me. Okay, you don't ask questions. The Rabbi says, okay. So he gets in a room, the Rebbe goes, he's sitting in his room, he's sitting with his Gemara, he's learning. Looks at his watch, all of a sudden the right time comes, whatever that is. And he gets up, he walks into the casino, walks straight over to a person, again, doesn't look like much of a Jew. He walks over to me, he says, I just want to let you know that Yayin Nesech, the non-kosher wine, clogs the mind and clogs the heart. You should be a good Jew and you should have a good night. And he walks back to his room. A couple hours later, he gets a knock on his door. guy's standing there crying his eyes out. Rebbe lets him in. They spend the whole night in conversation. And he ends up becoming a chassid of the Rebbe Maharash. And the Rebbe told his chassidim, he said, that soul, that neshama that I saved from the casino that time, he said it was one of the biggest, he said, I knew it was one of the biggest neshamas that had come to do. There hadn't been a neshama in the world like that neshama in a long time. Most of us don't have the eyes of the Rebbe Maharash to see the neshama the way that he saw the neshama. He knew things, he went places, and the tzaddikim used to say it was an unbelievable thing. It wasn't beneath his dignity. He said, to save a Jew, I'll go wherever I need to go. I'll go into low places to retrieve a Jew from such a place. But again, most of us don't have the eyes to see in that kind of way. But to have the eyes at least that Reb Freifeld had. Reb Freifeld wasn't talking. When Reb Freifeld said, see his neshama, he wasn't saying to the Rav who was sitting next to him to use some type of Kabbalistic power or x-ray vision to see his neshama. But to be able to look at a Jew and to know Yaakov Avinu Lomis. To know that even when you hear the Baskel saying, you need to go away, say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Afal Pichen, I'm coming back. That it's not possible to sever that connection to HaKadosh Baruch. The Belzer Rebbe, I'll end with this, the Belzer Rebbe, Rav Yeshua of Belz, or Sheila Belzer, used to always, when he would study, when he would learn Gemara, he would learn B'iyun Rav, B'derech HaPilpul, he used to study very, very in-depth, very detailed analytical analysis of every Gemara, every word, every Rishon. That was his style. So they asked him one time, they asked the Rebbe, they said, Rebbe, why do you love Pilpul? Why do you love to learn so in-depth? You know, some people dafka like to cover ground to see Shas more quickly, right? But not a letter would go by, not a word would go by, being medayik. He was always trying to answer up every little question. That was his style in learning, in lumnus. They said, why do you learn that way? He said, the obvious reason, of course, is that it's Torah Hashem, and I want to understand it very well. Listen to what he said. It's such a beautiful hashkaf on how we look at ourselves and how we look at our fellow Jews. He said, but part of the reason I train myself to learn Bi'iyun Rab, B'derech HaPilpul, to sharpen my mind in this way, he says, because sometimes you meet a Jew, and it's a Pashut Pshat Jew. You look at this Jew, and you see right away, you understand, it's an easy sugya. You understand how this Jew comes from Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, V'Leah. It's an easy Jew to interpret. He says, but sometimes you meet a Jew, and he or she is a complicated sugya. It's not so simple to see how this person comes from the same roots that I come from. Maybe this tree is no longer attached to the ground. Maybe this tree is no longer has the ability to produce fruits. Right? Maybe it's time to give up on this tree. And he said, I train myself, B'derech HaPilpul, to be able to analyze, to be able to investigate, to be able to explore deeply. So that way when I meet that type of Jew, I'm able to look at that type of Jew and try to put together the sukkah. To figure out how this Jew also has that light, so to speak, that Sraf Ula B'Ilan burning on the inside. So Mirtz Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help us. Again, a little bit of the secret, in my opinion, of what Tu B'Shvat's about. The story of Elisha ben Avuya. The one who thought it was possible to label oneself as an acher, as an outsider. The one who thought it was possible to be kitzeitz v'netios. But again, as his Talmidim were fighting for him, as Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Meir, Yaakov Avinu Lomes, they could try to celebrate our downfall as the Mitzvah of Mitzrayim celebrated the demise of Yaakov Avinu. But Yaakov Avinu Lomes, the reality is Yaakov lives on. Ilan, Ilan. What can I bless you with, Rabbon Shalom? What's our bracha, kiviyachol tiyo, kadosh baruch? That all the netios, that all the little saplings, that all the little Jews down below, who carry that little spark, again, that little kista dechiyus, that spark of divine, that kadosh baruch implanted in each and every one of us, should be kamoscha, should be like you. To try to the best of our ability, to again, to lift ourselves up. The sap should rise up, we should produce beautiful fruits for kadosh baruch. Again, if it's not nogeya to you as an individual, we all know someone. We all know someone who it's easy to look at on the surface and say, that person's not from the same tree that I come from. But to be able to have this perspective, to look at ourselves in the right way, to look at Klai Yisrael in the right way, and Amir Tashem in this way, to be able to produce beautiful fruits for Melech Malchai and Lachem Kodesh Baruch. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you.